At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Welcome to Stone Cold Shows. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Go follow them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan SCS. On today's episode, another one bites the dust as Houston's coaching staff continues to get a makeover. Free agency sounds expensive. Is the window still open for Houston? And more importantly, will the pocketbook be? We'll bounce that around, some names and some projected contracts courtesy of The Athletic. And what has the NBA scandal taught us about sports leagues, specifically how that applies to MLB and the Astros? I'll put that question to the guys. Before all that, Charlie, Josh, welcome in. Let's start with the newsy stuff. Astros pitching coach Bill Murphy departs the team to take a job in Pittsburgh, of all places. This is another name added to the list of the professionally departed for Houston. I don't think anyone's losing sleep over the hitting coaches and the medical staff being turned over, but the pitching side of things was one of Houston's bright spots. Do you think, you know, looking at this from the big picture, is the Astros organization at risk of possible brain drain with all of this loss?
Well, I think where the brain drain issue has been for multiple years now has been in the front office. Post Jeff Luhnow and then James Click and the Astros turning over all kinds of scouting positions and the Crane, Bagwell, Reggie Jackson offseason a couple of years ago. You can't men in black erase that from the memory, much as one might try. In terms of the coaching staff, I think a majority of engaged Astros fans, get rid of the hitting coaches. I mean, congrats to Troy Snitker, who gets the assistant hitting coach with the New York Mets. In the case of Bill Murphy leaving, I don't think anyone should extrapolate that to, oh, he's jumping for a lifeboat from the Titanic, the Astros sinking ship. I mean, the lifeboat is the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, granted, he will get to pitching coach. The one guy in baseball he'd absolutely trade Hunter Brown for as a starting pitcher in a heartbeat. Bill Murphy can't help but look smart coaching Paul Skeens. Pirates also have a couple of real good young pitchers. But more important is that rather than sitting in the sidecar, he's at the wheel now. Right? Josh Miller was the lead pitching coach and is with the Astros. Bill Murphy was the assistant. Now, Bill Murphy, even though it's the Pirates, I presume he gets a little bit of a salary bump, and he is the pitching coach. So that's not one that would have me wary. Or the Astros going to have anyone smart left on the coaching staff. I guess in the macro, it is reflective of just the stage of uncertainty and turnover for the Astros on the coaching staff and the roster to come.
Yeah, and the roster is the one I'm really excited to see if they try some things and experiment and just try and rebuild this thing from top to bottom. Yeah, I'm with Charlie there too with Miller. He's still here. So you have your pitching coach, and Dana Brown always talks about how he's really confident in his pitching coaches and their system and how they develop guys. So I think all that for the most part stays in place. I guess it's, you know, good news in some aspects that these guys are getting work with other teams across the league. So there is some type of motivation and resume where teams are interested in bringing these pieces in. So, but like I said, when we started, for me, it's what are they going to do with this roster? That's where it needs to begin.
I think as we talk about this, I mean, as we talk about the success of pitching and development for Houston, what you typically hear a lot is credit being given to the advanced scouting department for the successes that they've been able to realize on the pitching side, that's more of an analysis thing than it is pitching coach. So Josh, you talked about looking at the roster and that's where your interest is. All that segues nicely into our next conversation, which is, you know, while most of MLB content is about covering the World Series, former MLB exec and current Athletic contributor Jim Bowden put out his column ranking his top free agents. It's obviously of interest to us because Fromber, Bregman, and Tucker are some of the most highly coveted free agents out there. JV also makes that list. Bowden also identifies some free agents with whom he thinks Houston would be a good fit for. Beyond that, he gives some predictions at their comp. But I think probably a good place to start is Fromber, since we're operating under the assumption that Fromber won't be back because the market will be so rich for him. He has Fromber landing a six-year, $190 million deal, which is close to a $32 million AAV. I think that certainly prices out Houston, if not for the AAV, but I think the years. But there's also two other pitchers that are kind of in that same ballpark of age and comp. He has Ranger Suarez landing a six-year, $164 million deal. Dylan Cease grabbing a six-year, $187 million deal. So as we're looking at those three, I guess, you know, you can give your thoughts on how realistic you think some of those numbers are. And then I guess if all things were equal, who would you rather have out of that based on the numbers that we have to work with?
First, Jim Bowden, I think it was 16 years. He was a general manager, so he has connections still, though he's been out of the game for a bunch of years now. But through Connecticut contacts and a grapevine and so forth, he's still guessing. Last offseason, he had Christian Walker getting 3 years, $72 million. He got 3 years, 60 here. He had Yusei Kikuchi leaving the Astros for 3 years, $42 million. He got 3 years, $63 million. He was off by more than $100 million on Juan Soto. Of course, so were many when Daddy Warbucks with the Mets came in at $765 million. So Bowden's a fun read, but he's basically chucking darts at the board like most of the rest of us can. 6-190 on Fromber does not strike me as absurd given his performance and his durability, but just taking the numbers collectively, if you're an Astros fan, it's pretty depressing. Because it's like they're eating at the kiddie table on Thanksgiving, whereas the grown-ups will go bid on Fromber Valdez and Ranger Suarez and Dylan Cease before we even get to the offensive players. I do want to put in the caveat, and I get it because the Astros missed the playoffs. They've been trending down now over a three-year period. But the Jim Crane, as we enter the holiday season, is Ebenezer Scrooge and just miserly bah humbug. The Astros were seventh in MLB payroll in 2025. Just so happens they and the Mets were the only two franchises in the top eight to miss the playoffs. Well, that's a performance issue. That's not a cheapness issue. That was an asset allocation throwing away $50 million of 2025 funds on Abreu, Montero, Presley, Walker, etc. 2024, they were fifth in payroll. So they're not being the Pirates or the Marlins or anything like that. But the Astros are carrying a fistful of big ticket contracts, guys who are not worth it at this point. Altuve was not close to a $25 million player in 2025. Well, he has four more years coming at AAV, average annual value of $25 million. Carlos Correa, nowhere close to being worth $22 million off his 2025 production. Well, he counts $22 million for the Astros for each of the next 3 years. Walker is a 20. Josh Hader, whenever we see him, if he's back and wonderful for 70 innings, $19 million. Another year of Lance McCullers at $17 million. Yordan played 48 games for his $19 million in average annual value. So they're so top-heavy and bloated on the payroll, the idea that they have room to make a couple of splash acquisitions unless they're able to dump money somewhere, or Jim Crane says, okay, for a year or two, let's go crazy, folks, and we'll compete at the, if not Yankee and Met and Dodger levels, ahead of basically everyone else in baseball. Because I presume all of us, as we see $30 million per year plus for any of these pitchers, it means the Astros are folding their hand before the antes have been put on the table.
Yeah, Jim Crane doesn't like to go top of the market in free agency. We've only kind of seen that with Abreu and with Walker. It's top of the first base market, but for a guy in his 30s, it's only getting maybe a three-year deal. So I don't see him going gangbusters here. I think he's going to tell Dana Brown, go make some trades, go make some moves. You know, Bowden also talked about how Brewers, Freddie Peralta could be available. Maybe that's a guy the Astros go after. But once again, we get into that. Who's going to want to trade for the Astros when you have a piece like that? You could go to another system and get better quality players. But he's been really good. 30 starts in three straight years, 3.59 career ERA, had a 2.70 ERA in 2025. A little bit of struggle with the long ball, but Astros need pitching. So I wonder if they go that route somewhere along the line. I don't know. We talked about it before the show. We keep hearing about Alonso and the Astros have an interest in him. Could be that something that they explore if they keep bringing up his name. But we saw the projections for him. He's going to make a ton of money, and you already paid a first baseman. Brandon joked you paid two first basemen last year a ton of money. That just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So I'm really curious how they're going to finagle this. I wonder if Dana Brown just has to get super creative and find some, you know, some gems that other people aren't talking about.
Yeah, and to stick with, I guess, the poker analogy, Dana Brown's playing the short stack, right? If you don't have the money, self-imposed cap, to go bid on bigger fish, are you dropping down to 37-year-old Merrill Kelly, who's been solid? Michael King has been excellent for a couple of years, then in 2025, he lost a big chunk of the season to injury, right? Those guys, Bowden projects in the three-year, $75 million range, much shorter contract, much less total cash on the barrel head. On the trade front, the system's a joke. I mean, there's a lot of scuttlebutt that one season away from his free agency, the Tigers are open for business on Tarek Skubal. Mm-hmm. The Astros could offer their entire farm system for Tarek Skubal, and the Tigers would go, yeah, thanks for trying. The Seattle Mariners have 8 of the top 90 prospects in the game, according to MLB Pipeline. The Astros have Bryce Matthews at number 93 as their lone entry in the top 100. So unless Dana Brown gets colleagues drunk at the general manager in winter meetings, or has some hocus pocus voodoo spell to cast, where a major upgrade can come from beats the hell out of me and probably Dana Brown.
Yeah, I think he'll have to be real creative. I want to circle back to what you said about Jim Crane and how you can't complain that he doesn't spend when he's in the top 7 in payroll, but it's just, we talk about this all the time. It's a results-driven league. So it's really hard, in my opinion, to give the organization credit for spending when then when they misspend, they paint themselves into the corner that then they can no longer spend because they're self-imposing a cap on themselves to say, but we've spent all we're comfortable spending. So I think that's really where I'm at odds and kind of judging this organization. I wonder, just real quickly, we don't have to stay on this, but do you think in hindsight now, we look back, was letting Kikuchi walk for a three-year, $63 million deal, was that kind of a blunder on Houston's part, given the state of the pitching staff now?
I won't say blunder. I was a little surprised that Kikuchi got over $20 million per year, and it took a terrible Angels organization overpaying for him to get that. But as a pitcher who was just excellent for his 2 months here, now it was 2 months, not 2 years, but he was excellent. He 5-6 years basically hasn't missed a turn. So rock solid, durable. If you could get Kikuchi right now for 3 years, $63 million, that would seem very fair value given what the Astros have on campus and seemingly don't have to go spend in this offseason.
Sure. I mean, who wouldn't want to have him right now considering you're about to lose Fromber? You'd feel a lot better about it if you had Kikuchi on the roster, but I also look back that, you know, hindsight's 2020 and the amount of injuries that they got to the pitching staff. We even forget about Wes Neske. Like, you were hoping he could give you some innings this year, and the Arrigetti just hurt and doesn't pitch well. You know, Luis Garcia, I mean, just what a terrible ending to what could be his career. So a lot of things went against them where, and we did talk about it before the season. It would be nice to have a little more pitching, but I think it was just a tidal wave that nobody saw coming of the amount of injuries they got in that short period of time. And then at the same time, you got Fromber just falling off at the end of the year and just down the stretch, he was just terrible. So it was just all these different things happening at one time. Pena missing all that time with the rib. it just wasn't their year. Sometimes that happens, and you just have to suck it up and be like, you know, maybe it'll be better next year. I remember the Yankees missed the playoffs not that long ago, and they were right back in it the next year. So you just got to hope that you get a little more lucky with the injuries. And how about maybe the guys play a little bit better? You know, I know that they're getting older, but is it too much to ask that maybe some of your staple players elevate their game and play a little better this season?
On the pitchers, Brandon, jumping back a week, Bowden pegs Verlander at 1 year, $12 million.
You know what's interesting, Josh, is that, you know, as we're talking about the injuries, I kind of circle back to what Charlie has pushed back on over the past several weeks, which is like, yes, there was certainly a tidal wave of injuries that happened, but they never lost Brown or Fromber throughout that. And I don't know that anybody that they lost was as good as Kikuchi.
But Fromber was awful, like down the stretch for like the last third of the season. He was healthy, but he was terrible.
But his overall season, he was good. He was 13th in the American League in earned run average, and 190 innings of good is better than anyone else they had other than Hunter Brown. And look at the Dodgers about to try to win another World Series. Obviously, their own payroll stratosphere. Well, with the Mets. But Blake Snell made 11 starts all season. Glasnow missed half the season. Otani made 14 starts, averaged 3 1/3 innings, right? Yamamoto was their only bell cow who was healthy all season. The Astros owned no monopoly on starting pitching injuries. And as we've discussed in weeks past, guys that they lost, a number of them, not much there in terms of resume, right? Blanco had one very good season. Wesneski's done nothing yet. Arrighetti had two nice months after the All-Star break, but wasn't off to a good start this season. And if they don't have those injuries, they don't get the 20 taken as a group outstanding starts of work. They got out of Jason Alexander and Brandon Walker before they went down. So if hope is the plan, they'll kind of deserve to be disappointed.
Indeed. We just have to touch on it because it's in the article, but he's got Kyle Tucker at the top of his list, projected to get 10 years, $427 million. Now, I don't think that's crazy. I wonder, who do you guys think, you know, I mean, do you think that's the neighborhood that we're talking here? And who do you think ends up picking up the bill on that?
I think that's definitely the number, because once that number for Soto came out, that's when Dana Brown went, man, if he got that much, Tucker should have no problem getting 400. I'm sure that went across their minds, Dana Brown and Jim Crane. So I'm not surprised at all that it's going to be right around there for Tucker. 10 years, we always heard he wanted a longer contract. So that seems like a big commitment to me, but free agency is kind of crazy. The numbers are big, and it's like that every year.
It's extremely stupid. Kyle Tucker is not worth $42 million. Two seasons in a row now, he's missed time to injury, and he was benched briefly with the Cubs, for goodness sakes. Now, still had an excellent season, an OPS plus of like 136. He's an outstanding player. He's not a franchise player year in, year out. 10 years will take him to age 38, $42 million per year, but all it takes is one of the multi-billion dollar conglomerate franchises. The Mets are out, presumably, with Soto playing right field. Don't throw anything. The Dodgers could make sense.
They have interest.
They could move Teoscar Hernandez to left field. They have Andy Páez in center. They do have a young, elite outfield prospect on the come, but probably still 2 years away. The Yankees, if they don't re-sign Cody Bellinger, that left-handed swing, he doesn't strike me as a New York temperament type of guy. But for the right money, I bet you he could become one. So it's going to be a financial superpower franchise that signs him. And the Astros are much more have than have not, but they're no financial superpower franchise. So yeah, I think we can safely rule out the reunion on Tuck.
Yeah. If the Dodgers ended up being the ones who sign Tucker to a deal and add them to their super team, I'll walk to MLB headquarters myself with chain and lock in hand to lock the players out, because that will be the ultimate sign that we need some change in this league as far as compensation goes. So I'm going to talk out of my both sides of my mouth on this show, because on the one hand, I say, why are we still talking about the Astros and sign stealing? On the other side of my mouth, I'm going to talk about the Astros and sign stealing because two reasons. One is Springer still in the news, getting hurt and being cheered, you know, his injury cheered by some terrible fans. The other thing that brings this up is because of all of the headlines that the NBA has grabbed over the last week with the revelations of the gambling ring that the FBI has busted up, which implicates Chauncey Billups, Terry Rozier, and other guys. One of the things that came out of that investigation, and why this reminds me of MLB, there's evidence the NBA had prior knowledge that some funny business was going on. They did their own investigation and then shockingly determined that there was nothing to it. It reminds me of MLB because of the way that the sign stealing scandal was handled, and that the league seemed really apt to just allow Houston to be the scapegoat because they were the more visible. They did the most egregious part of the sign stealing, which was to make audible signals to players in real time, which there's no evidence that that existed in any of the teams that were participating in using technology and decoding signals, which was also against the rules. MLB tried their best from the very surface level investigations to protecting the letter, trying their hardest to fight the Yankees letter from being unsealed. Thought exercise here, but do you think had MLB not been left to their own devices, had a third party come in and investigate and was really allowed to dig in to the extent of the league and how pervasive sign stealing was, do you think the outcome and the legacy of the sign stealing scandal would have been different had a proper investigation been allowed to proceed?
I don't have real strength of conviction on this. I think the biggest variable would have been had the Astros not won the World Series. Then it would have not blown over. It would have become a much less bold print in the permanent record that the cheating Stros won in 2017. I mean, fundamental difference, MLB, in essence, got the conviction, right? The Astros were caught red-handed and they were punished. And I think Jim Crane basically was told, you have to fire Luno and Hinch, which also enabled Crane to kind of separate himself from that. Neither of these leagues, or any of the leagues for that matter, have subpoena power. You know, they can't threaten, you can either settle with us now or, you know, we're the FBI. We have a 94% conviction rate or whatever it is. I don't think anyone really believes that Kawhi Leonard and Steve Ballmer and the Clippers, oh, it was all just independent and on the up and up. And what a wonderful coincidence that all this money funneled to Kawhi Leonard and he had nothing to do and had nothing to do with violating the salary cap, blah, blah, blah. You know, the leagues, they do value their integrity other than all getting in bed with all the gambling outfits because, hey, their money's green too, dark and a lot of it. They want to shine the light of their investigations, and we're looking into this, but we don't want maximum wattage on there because this is really in our best interest. Oh boy, if we come up with the ugliest side underbelly, and so how much do we really want to find out and know? So I don't know how it would have changed, but look, the Astros did it, and their players were given immunity to acknowledge that they did it. So I don't know that the legacy would be a whole lot different other than circling back to where I started. Had they not won the World Series, if not no biggie, would not have been nearly as a biggie.
I think had the league taken some action then maybe there'd be more clarity on what actually happened and who actually cheated and who did what. Because by kind of burying their heads in the sand, you allowed John Boy Media to be born, and you have some guy nobody's hardly heard of, just some guy online digital sitting there listening to all the trash can bangs and then eventually coming up with conspiracy theories about buzzers that weren't even true. And most the common person just believes that that happened and that that's real. So I think that's, you run that risk if you don't try and uncover these things yourself and have a little more openness. Then it allows somebody else to come in and notice something that you didn't, and then you may look even worse after that than if you had just come out and talked about it ahead of time. And the other thing I think of too is how much heat George Springer's getting right now for the cheating scandals. Yet nobody says anything about Mookie Betts. He's out there on the Dodgers, and they got busted for cheating when he was in Boston. Draft picks were taken away. They had to fire a video guy. So they all did that too. But nobody really talks about that. It's always just the Astros.
Charlie, to piggyback on your point, I don't think it was just that. It was that they won the World Series. It's who they beat on their way to winning the World Series, which was two of the biggest franchises who have the largest fan bases beating that drum. I think there's always the risk that had a third party investigated, maybe it would have been confirmed that Houston did the most cheating. Like, we don't know. But on the flip side of that is I wonder, even had a third party investigated and confirmed that multiple teams were doing the exact same thing, would it matter? Because the Astros were the first, most visible. And as you said, Josh, they got kind of highlighted because what they were doing was audibly trackable. So you could have a guy like John Boy going out and marrying the footage with the trash can bangs and making they made it so easy. And for the stupidity alone, they probably deserve the amount of scrutiny that they've received. Final thoughts before we jump out on this episode.
The Gold Glove Awards are handed out when we get into the post-World Series season and the trickle of awards culminating with MVP in 3 weeks or so, MVPs 3 weeks. Not going to be a bountiful harvest in the awards front for the Astros. They do have two Gold Glove finalists. Neither guy should win. Cam Smith's rookie season that began with so much promise and then just went down the toilet the second half of the season. But for a guy who converted to right field on the fly, starting the season, a lot of promise, chance to become an elite right fielder. And he is a Gold Glove finalist, probably should be third among the three finalists, which being a finalist, very impressive. And Mauricio Dubon, perhaps on his way out the door, won it a couple of years ago as a utility guy. He's back as a finalist, though Ernie Clement of the Blue Jays pretty clearly should win that award this year. But one to keep tabs on when the Cy Young voting comes out in 3 weeks. Does Hunter Brown finish third? Skubal's going to win. Garrett Crochet's probably going to finish second. The Astros really need Hunter Brown to finish third. If he does, the Astros get an additional draft pick that would come at the end of the first round. The program they put in a couple of years ago to encourage teams to promote top prospects from the very start of the season. The Mariners got an extra first-round pick from Julio Rodriguez, winning Rookie of the Year back in 2021. The Astros can get a bonus pick at the end of the first round if Hunter Brown is on the medal podium. He has no chance to win, probably won't finish second, but he should finish third over Max Fried, and the Astros should get that bonus pick at the end of the first round.
My quick takeaway is Bleacher Report. We love Bleacher Report. When they put these little trade possibilities together, it's all fun for everybody. But can we make it somewhat realistic? I was telling the guys before the show. So they had this three-way trade where the Astros get Stephen Kwan, basically a slappy outfield hitter, 281 career hitter, topped out at like 14 home runs. He's under control for a few years. Fine. But to get that, the Astros would have to give the Orioles Brian Abreu, and they would have to give the Guardians Jacob Melton and Spencer Arrighetti. This team has no pitching. They're going to go out and give away Spencer Arrighetti and a guy that was your closer for part of this year, who's an affordable option, at least he hasn't been a free agent yet. And all for that you're going to get is a left-handed, that's a slappy hitter with no power. Plus, you got Altuve you're worried about mixing into the left field and Yordan. That just makes no sense from an Astros perspective. So come on, Bleacher Report, give us a better Astros trade.
You know, on that note, it makes me think of Jake Meyers because, you know, we had a lot of talk about the progress and the turnaround year that Jake Meyers had. I would be interested to see what this offseason looks like because Dana Brown, to make things happen, he's going to have to make at least a trade. And so I wonder, does Jake Meyers get sold high on? I don't want to necessarily see him go, but I could certainly see the argument for selling high given his history. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you do listen on podcasts on apps like Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon Singh. So long. Thanks for listening. And as always, Go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.